37. When the ley line disappeared, it was a very nice day. All of New England was experiencing an unseasonably warm afternoon, but it was a good kind of unseasonably warm. Not warm enough to make all the conversation center around anything unpleasant like climate change and the growing price of avocados, but warm enough that residents could shed their coats and gloves and get some of the old steps in, take the kid for a walk, knock the spiders off the badminton set in the garage. Days like this, they said, remind you what it's all about. Three Zeds were dreaming busily on this unseasonably warm afternoon, and thus not able to enjoy it. Two of them, Bride and Ronan Lynch, slept just a few yards away from a car that was very difficult to see. They had not been dreaming long, but already dried oak leaves had flickered from the woods around them and lit upon their clothes. There is a certain wrongness to seeing leaves settle on a body. It is not the same as leaves drifting over a rooftop or a fallen log. It makes one anxious to see it. It is wrong. Opposite. The third dreamer, Hennessy, dreamt on an oversized bean bag in a small room in a tea shop. Two women watched her closely. One of the women, a woman so old that numbers no longer felt relevant to describe her age, gently brushed her fingers across Hennessy's forehead as she slept. The other woman stood watchfully at the door, her hands on a dreamt sword with the words, "From Chaos," etched on the hilt. She was ready to swing it at once should Hennessy wake with a nightmare instead of a dream to save them all. "I don't have a good feeling about this," the woman with the sword said. "It will be all right," the old woman replied, brushing her fingers over the dreamer's forehead again, but her hand was trembling a little. The people who loved the dreaming Zeds were also unable to enjoy the warm afternoon. Adam Parrish, who loved Ronan, sat on the floor of his dorm room alone, a single candle lit, his tarot cards stacked face up beside it. He stared into the flame, throwing his mind out into the dream space. He was trying to reach Ronan Lynch, but it was like a phone that kept ringing and ringing. This was a dangerous game, but he kept trying. He let his mind wander a little farther from his body each time. "Ronan! Ronan!" But instead, he kept catching glimpses of Bride. Everything felt hot. He could smell smoke. He was smoke, drifting, drifting. "Oh, Ronan, what have you done?" he thought miserably. "What are you doing?" Matthew Lynch, who also loved Ronan, had gone walking, not wandering like a dream, but walking like an ordinary teen with purpose. While Declan was occupied with secretive errands, Matthew had set up an appointment with a local school for a tour. He was going to finish high school. He'd decided. He didn't know what he was going to do afterward, but until then, he was going to take Jordan's advice and start treating himself as real until Declan did too. It was a very stuffy school office, though, and he could see the day through the tiny window next to him. It was hard not to wish he was out there instead. He found himself, quite suddenly, thinking about fire. He wasn't sure why. He touched his cheek. It was hot. The school hadn't adjusted their heating for this unseasonable day. Declan Lynch, who also loved Ronan, was cornered in his own apartment by a handful of extremely pissed-off moderators. They had just lost three Zeds at a rose garden and had no visionary to provide further leads. They had not immediately decided how they were going to use Declan to get their hands on Ronan, but they had decided they would grab him first and then figure out the finer points later. He was all they had. "I'm no good as leverage," Declan told them. He thought about the gun he'd taped to the bottom of the kitchen table. It was 4 feet away, but might as well have been 400. Even if he could somehow get it, what was one gun against a room full of them. As far as he's concerned, he thinks I just tried to get him killed. He couldn't help but think about how Bride's little dreamt orb would have let him walk out untouched. How Ronan's sun dog spilled from the bottle would have emptied this apartment instantly. Such power. Such power for just a very few people to hold. Oh, Ronan, he thought, suddenly angry that his brother could never see the bigger picture, the long game. What are you going to do now? Jordan, who loved Hennessy, was walking from her studio to Declan's apartment, head down, eyebrows furrowed, reading a news story on her phone. It was about a massive Boston street race that had sent 7 drivers to area hospitals in critical condition. The chief of police had given a statement urging drivers to remember that life was not a video game or a movie franchise. Actions like this had real consequences. She wondered if the play against Bride had worked. Declan wasn't picking up his phone. "I wish you were dead," Hennessy had told her. Jordan's cheeks felt hot as she walked. Fiery. Her chest ached and burned. She didn't know why Hennessy had to be like this. If they were still living together, they would have talked it out by now. Hennessy would have calmed down, gotten sad instead of mad, and eventually just gone limp, giving up. They would have once more reached equilibrium. Well, not they. Jordan was rarely the emergency. Hennessy was the emergency. Hennessy, thought Jordan, why didn't you give me all your memories? None of them guessed the fate of the afternoon was currently playing out inside the minds of the dreaming Zeds. The Zeds moved inside a shared dream that jerked from one thing to another. First it was the lace, jagged and hateful. Then it was the Smith Mountain Dam, with a slow, sentient fire picking away at its base. Then it was the game, with each Zed in a different car jockeying for control of both the race and the dream. It was a studio. It was a farm. It was a parking lot dumpster with opera singing sweetly. It was a teen girl in a gallery looking for Hennessy. It was a fire dragon exploding over a car. It was a bullet in a woman's head. It was Bride crouched next to Locke's body in a featureless field. "This game of yours," Bride said to Locke's body, "this game of yours will only end in pain. Take a look. The rules are changing. Do you understand? Do you understand what we could do? Leave my dreamers alone." "Bride," Ronan said, but Bride didn't attend. "Thanks for the focus. I couldn't do that without you here," Hennessy said. She stood by the invisible car watching Bride plow through his lines from the memory. "God, remember when you told me to kill my clones, and then we basically ran away with yours?" She knew about Bride. She knew because the dream had presented the knowledge to her without remark, as dreams sometimes do. The knowledge was this: Bride was a dream. Bride was Ronan's dream. "How are you doing that to him?" Ronan asked. Hennessy narrowed her eyes at the horizon where smoke billowed. "I heard him tell that moderator a clever thing at the Rose Garden. Did you hear him? He said he didn't play mind games. He just turned the sound down on the stuff that didn't matter. Why didn't he teach us that shit? That shit I can use. I'm using it now. He gave us such a hard time about what was real and what was a dream, but he was talking about himself too, wasn't he? Doesn't know what he really is any more than we do. What's real now, Bride? What do you feel?" Bride didn't attend. He was still moving through the memory. "Of course he has a stake in all this," Hennessy said. "He told you he wanted to keep Matthew awake without you? He meant he wanted to stay awake. Fucking Oedipal, man." "Shut up," Ronan said. "What's your big plan here? Shut down the ley lines to keep away the lace?" Hennessy popped finger guns at him. Then she reached into her pocket and pulled out a silver orb. It was possible to tell in the way of dreams that even though it looked a lot like Bride's silver orb, it was not at all the same. It pulsed its intentions through the dream. Its intention was this: stop the ley line.
So what now? Hennessy asked. We like battle forever? Is that going to be how it is? I try to make this thing that will shut down the line, and you change the dream so I can't remember what I was doing, and round and round and round.
The two Zeds eyed each other. The dream pulsed with unspoken feelings. But none of them were malice. Really, they were just two. One dreamer was feeling, I need this to stop everything. And the other dreamer was feeling, I need this to start something. And the other Zed, the Zed who was also a dream, kept going through the motions. He was walking toward an Airstream trailer that had just appeared in time for him to walk to it. Hennessy was somehow recreating the memory perfectly for him, everything taken in with her artist's eye and thrown back at him. She was very powerful when she was doing that. On the horizon, the smoke continued to billow. The Smith Mountain Dam was there in the middle of these cornfields, being taken down slowly but surely by the unruly, otherworldly fire. Eerie dark herons circled above it, looking wispy as the smoke trail from a candle. They were ready to scoop up the fire and carry it wherever Ronan needed it to go. They would make the journey from Connecticut to the real dam in Virginia in very little time at all. Ronan was somehow holding the intention of the fire intact while also holding a conversation with Hennessy and also quietly shaping the dream into something else in the background without anyone noticing. He was very powerful when he was doing that. The lace isn't here now, Ronan said. As long as we work together, there's no lace. I can keep it away forever. We can take a break from what we're doing. Hennessy, I found you before. You were drowning. I came looking for you. I wanted to do this with you. Do you remember? Don't make me beg. Hennessy held the silver orb in front of one of her eyes and squinted, like it was a pirate's eye patch. Both of them could sense it. It was not so much a presence as a non-presence. It was an absence of potential. It was a TV with the cord yanked from the wall. She didn't say anything. Hennessy always had something to say, but she didn't say anything. You fuck everyone this way, Ronan said. His quiet changes to the dream were now visible to him, although still hidden to her. Slowly, birds were gathering behind her. Hundreds. Thousands. The fields were lousy with them. As he twitched his fingers by his side, they twitched too. A gathering storm. They had a single intention built into them too. Get the orb from Hennessy. Destroy it so that Ronan could wake without it. Destroy it so Ronan could wake with his dam-destroying flames instead. Have you thought about the consequences? You can't deal so the whole world has to instead?
I'm the rubber, and you're the glue, Ronan Lynch, Hennessy replied. What's funny is, Bride's you, and he's still more right than you are. You're still thinking like a non-dreamer. At least I'm thinking like a forger.
She pointed behind him. Ronan just had time to look and see that the real Hennessy stood there, holding another silver orb in her fingers. This one was even stronger than the other Hennessy was holding. It was not just the absence of sensation. It was a blanket of nothingness. It was noise-canceling, sound-deadening, pressure-relieving, stain-lifting, subscription-canceling. And his birds were pointed at the wrong Hennessy and the wrong orb, and Hennessy woke up in the middle of the tea house.
Liliana, said Carmen Farouk Lane.
I know, replied Liliana.
they both looked at the little silver orb cupped in Hennessy's paralyzed hands. They had not seen it appear. Instead, their minds bent and folded on themselves. One part of their brains tried to tell them the orb had always been there. The other part remembered that it had not. The rule of dreamt objects is this. If it worked in the dream, it worked in real life. Hennessy's orb worked in the dream. It worked in real life. The effects upon the unseasonably nice afternoon were immediate. Dreamt birds dropped out of the sky here and there, pinging off windshields and onto the sidewalk before coming to a rest, sleeping. Dreamt dogs suddenly slept at dog parks, much to their owner's surprise. Cars veered off the road and into each other, their dreamt drivers suddenly staring into space. A nanny pushing a pram outside a converted church in downtown Boston found herself pushing a child who could not be woken. Social media lit up with reports of power outages as wind turbines mysteriously dozed to stillness. At Logan Airport, a landing aircraft completely missed the runway and careened toward the bay. Air traffic control shouted to an unresponsive pilot before turning its attention to the radio reports of other planes dropping out of the sky across the globe. In a very stuffy school office, Matthew Lynch put a hand to his burning hot cheek. "Are you all right, honey?" asked the school secretary. "I'm sorry," he muttered, and then he fell fast asleep. In Declan Lynch's apartment, Declan Lynch watched in astonishment as Locke stopped speaking mid-sentence and fell to his knees, followed by two of the other moderators. In the shock, he leapt for the gun beneath the table. Ripping it from its place, he pointed it at one of the three remaining moderators. "What's going on here?" Declan demanded. But the others, too, swayed against each other. They were asleep before he got his answer. Their sleep was the answer. In a Connecticut picnic area, Bride sat up, shaking leaves off his body and memory cobwebs from his mind. He reached into the pocket of his gray jacket and looked at the sweet metal he had stolen off Locke weeks and weeks before. It was not very strong, but it was enough for now. He looked then to Ronan Lynch, who still slept, leaves across his face. "Wake up," he said, but Ronan did not. On the sidewalk in front of Declan's apartment, Jordan stood with her head tilted back, listening to sirens wailing. In front of her, a bird plummeted thoughtlessly to the sidewalk with a surprisingly quiet flump. She crouched beside it. It was a beautiful little thing, jeweled and impossible. She touched its chest softly. It was not dead. It was fast asleep. Her heart was beating very, very fast. She could feel the ley lines sucking away from her, away from everything. It was like feeling the air leaving a room. It was like that day all those weeks ago when Hennessy had dreamt an entire ocean into the room and she'd suddenly found herself inhabiting a world that wasn't meant to support her. One couldn't argue with an ocean. Either you had an oxygen tank or you didn't. At the end of the sidewalk, the door to the apartment building burst open. Declan stood in it, his jacket half pulled on, his keys dangling in his hand. She didn't need to be told that he had been coming to look for her. She could see it in his body language, in his face. "Jordan," he said, "you're..." She could see another bird falling from the sky, a larger one, at the end of the street. It set off the car alarm when it hit the windshield. With wonder, she said to Declan, "I'm awake." She was very, very awake. It really was a nice day. End of book two. This is Will Patton. We hope that you have enjoyed Mr. Impossible, The Dreamer Trilogy, Book 2, by Maggie Stiefvater. This program was produced and directed by Scott Sherritt. Executive producer, Paul R. Gagne. Post-production by Danny Meltzer. Recorded by Julian Dreyer at Echo Mountain Studios in Asheville, North Carolina. There Are Not Two of You, by Maggie Stiefvater. Performed by Maggie and William Stiefvater. Print edition published by Scholastic, Inc. Text copyright 2021 by Maggie Stiefvater. Production copyright 2021 by Scholastic, Inc. All rights reserved.